Welcome to How Fitting, the podcast for slow fashion designers and entrepreneurs about creating clothing and growing a business that fits your customer lifestyle and values. I'm your host, Allison Haynes. Has listening to How Fitting helped you create a better fit in your fashion business? Episode 100 of this podcast is coming up, and I'm planning a special episode featuring the most notable moments from the 104 guests I've had on this podcast so far, plus your story. Head over to howfittingpodcast.com and tell me about your favorite How Fitting episode and how it has impacted you or your business. Submit your answers or send me a voice note by August 1st, 2024 to be included in the episode. The link is in the show notes.
And today I am joined by Kiona Moy of Victory. So welcome to the show, Kiona.
Hi, Allison. I'm so excited to be here.
Welcome. For those listening who are meeting you for the first time, could you share just a bit about who you are and what you do?
Yeah, so I am DIY teach myself designer and entrepreneur who started Victory, a band-free, knit-free, neuro-inclusive bras apparel brand out of a personal need. So starting out, I've been in healthcare all my life. I've done everything from help old people go bathroom to consulting with C-suite. And it was during this time when I was consulting, my job was basically to tell doctors that, hey, you're gonna make less on your bonus because you're not performing well on your quality metrics. So that was always a very sensitive conversation to have. And I look super young. Yeah. And being like a woman of color in that role, having those conversations too with people in the medical field with that power hierarchy, it was very nervous going into those conversations, and I have sensory sensitivities. So being already nervous in those conversations, I would literally be sweating. And when you have a tight bra band and you're sweating and you're nervous, it doesn't create a situation where I didn't feel like I set myself up for success with those conversations, because I just could not be comfortable with myself and I couldn't focus on what I was doing. So I was like, there must be another way. But I knew if I did go braless, two little pointy things would make everybody stare at me sideways, especially in a professional field. So I went about learning how to product design and start a business. And after 4 years of fumbling around, I launched on Kickstarter in 2022 in June, and we validated our MVP, minimal viable product, which you can buy in stores right now. And now we have partnered with a doctor and another designer out of New York to really relaunch this fashionable, neuro-inclusive bras apparel line.
Oh, cool. And yeah, I can totally... I'm also like get nervous with sensitive conversations, especially like that. So I can totally see if I can't focus because there's my clothing is like distracting me. And then if I change it to be comfortable, then it's distracting for everyone else. And yeah, you really created something new with this no nip tee. So
exactly. Yeah. And I think, yeah, how our boobs show up in the workplace, there is some importance to it. I think boobs, they've just been, especially women's boobs, we're taught from a young age you have to wear a training bra, because even though we literally have nothing, so we've been socialized to cover ourselves and to be conservative, even though strapping a little tiny elastic band with two triangle cotton things over your boobs doesn't really do anything, right? So yeah, it's like psychological element as well.
Definitely. So I'm curious, this is such a very, it's a very personal decision of like, how as women we want to show up and cover our boobs or not. But then there's also this kind of social decision where we feel pressured to dress for attention or to avoid attention. So how have you with Victory balanced kind of dressing for like women's own physical comfort while also dressing for the social comfort of others? Because it's kind of this balance between, okay, do I do what's kind of best and feel good for me, or do I kind of cave to the social pressure or the things that I like grew up being like taught was what women do or what men think women should do and all of that. There's so much in that conversation. So how have you kind of approached that with Victory?
Exactly. That's such a good, great question. And yes, all of that stuff goes through our head every morning when we get dressed, when we decide to put on a bra or not. But yeah, at Victory, we really believe that it's about self-sovereignty. So it's whatever makes you feel most comfortable that day. Like if you're just going to go do errands and you don't really, or if you're just laying around at home and you're under family and you don't care about having your nips out, or you're just having a bunch of girlfriends over, then that's great on you. Or you want to look hot because you want to go out and knowing that your booth makes you feel sexy, then more power to you. But conversely, if you have a big meeting and you just don't want to deal with people possibly staring at your nips or boobs and you want them to look professional, then in that context, wearing a Victory tee would be great for that situation. Make me comfortable and confident in the way you look. So yeah, all about what being comfortable on your turn.
Yeah, so it sounds like you're more, it's not so much, oh, we need to dress and cover up and have some sort of linear coverage for our boobs or other people. It's more what would make you more confident as the woman in the situation. Do you want the focus to be on what you're saying in this professional setting versus on your body, in which case you choose to be, you're more confident covering up a little bit more? Sounds like you're really focused on how the woman feels and not like what everyone else in the room is feeling.
Exactly. That's such a great way to put it. Yes.
So this is kind of something new that, I mean, hasn't really been around much in the market. I mean, there's camis and tops and t-shirts that have kind of a built-in bra, but it has the underband. It's more constricting. It has straps or the elastic. And you're doing something that's very different. What was it like creating something new for the first time? What were kind of the first steps you took to even communicate this idea or come up with the idea when this isn't really a prevalent type of product in the market already?
Yeah, it was first coming back in the beginning is just about what I wanted. So I have boobs that they're on the smaller end. So yes, I feel comfortable going braless. And I just looked at a bra and I was like, why? So that was the first step. And I was like, I don't need the band. I don't need the straps. And we're in a professional setting. I could use the shaping and the shielding. So maybe that is like the only part I need. And I can get rid of all this other stuff. That was the beginning.
So yeah, just looking at what you need, what you don't need. Was it ever kind of difficult to communicate that? I imagine there being maybe some challenges in getting factories or sample makers to deviate from the normal kind of built-in bra that they're used to doing. Has that been the case for you?
Oh, yes. With factories and with customers, which I totally understand. So with factories, they're like, I think this would be better with an elastic band. I'm like, yeah, it could, but that's not the direction we're going in. So I had to go through 3 or 4 development packages in the beginning just to get my idea across with people who understood it. So just have to keep trying. Yeah, solid on your vision. And then yeah, just be, again, when you're communicating with factories, just, again, be firm in your vision and communicate your vision to the factories, give them the reasons why, and, yeah, just the why behind the design process. And then with customers, I think we're all used to our boobs feeling secured. And we're conditioned to have that underband on us, again, from training bras. So it has been a little bit of an educational component and just a change in the way our boobs can be in the world.
Have you kind of gotten a lot of pushback from people, or had to do a lot of like education or explaining kind of this new way? Or did you find there is like a segment of women who are like, oh, yeah, I get it. That's what I want too.
Yeah. So it was through customer interviews. We found that the women who most resonated with our products were women who were like, I'm just a very feelings person, or I have ADHD, or I have skin issues, where a tight bra band really impact their ability to show up fully themselves in daily life. Because when you have inflamed skin from eczema, chafing literally causes you pain. And then ADHD, the compression, because you have anything tactile-y tight against your skin can just really impact your ability to focus. So we went to the people that knew or had first-hand experience of our problems the most. But now the pickle we're trying to solve now is how to grow awareness of the benefits of neuroinclusive design and how, try to write messaging for this, because I think neuroinclusivity is on the rise, but it's still, there's an educational component.
Yeah, so talk more about that. Was that initially part of the brand, or how did that kind of neuroinclusive aspect come about, and where is it right now?
Yeah, so initially it was not part of the brand. I don't think I even knew I had sensory sensitivities, but when I started interviewing my customers, and I have a wonderful advisor, marketing advisor, Sarah Vasquez. She is ADHD. She has ADHD and fibromyalgia. So I was telling her my issues, and she was like, oh my gosh, I have the same problems with tight bra bands because I have ADHD. And then she was telling me all of her symptoms. And I was like, oh yeah, I resonate with some of these. So I think many of us, me, don't even know we are sensitive to clothing, but we've just been, because we've been socialized to wear bras or itchy, tight fabrics all our life. It's just like something we think we have to endure. So I think one is being like, yes, I'm a sensitive person and that's fine. And there is another way to go about our boobs, have another way. That is not so irritating. And so now it's part of our design philosophy is designing for extremes or designing for the edges. So we believe if you think of a bell curve, most fashion is designed for this 5% of normal that we see on media, slim, tall, and honestly, and like a lot of the dress forms we use, it has that ideal figure that designers all design on. So we believe in designing for the extremes of neuroinclusivity. So that means having tagless designed soft fabric, flat seams that don't irritate, and bandless designs, which means having a loose fitting tee, or we're having a new lounge collection which has like gentle compression throughout, which can be anxiety relieving for people who are neurodivergent and just people who aren't too. It can feel like a gentle hug. So incorporating, like building to those quote unquote extremes just makes a better product for everybody else.
Yeah, I love that. So it sounds like this aspect kind of came to light as you were talking to more and more people and has evolved to be a more integral part of not only the marketing, but your design process too.
Exactly. Yes. And it's all about in sustainability too, like being inclusive of the planet and the planet's need, like when we design. It's just, yeah, just when we're designing a more thoughtful way that not just about input outputs, it just makes for a better world, I think, more existentially.
Yeah, I think it's so interesting, niche clothing. And not to say niches and not a lot of people can benefit from it, but not kind of that bell curve normal that everyone designs for, because it is such, it really honors the relationship between like clothing and the body and really pays attention to the people wearing it. And it's beyond just, oh, we're going to make this pretty garment and then you have to like force your body to fit into this. It's the other way around. It's like, how can we create something that is brings out the beauty and allows the person, the body, to really focus and do what they want to and express who they are? And I always just find it so interesting how it can affect the whole design process to create something like new and unique and really like beneficial for so many people.
Yes. And that's by having the customer people in the center of it and not trying to turn out style after style, season after season. I think it's definitely a new way, the future of design, to be a more sustainable way.
Mm-hmm. So as you mentioned, it took 4 years to kind of develop this initial product and the brand. Were there any other things that were kind of surprising to you that you learned? You're like, oh, this is a benefit, or like this type of person would really be interested in this? Or were there any surprises in kind of the business you thought you were building and then like how the business ended up by the time you launched this first product?
Yeah. Or so when I first launched, there's definitely differences between when I first launched and today. So when I first launched, I just wanted a really comfortable shirt for me that I could confidently wear in the workplace without wearing a bra and worrying about people side-eyeing my nip. But now I've talking to people, there's so much use for a bandless design, like people who have had breast augmentation, post-surgery, any surgery around the chest where it's a tender spot, so there is no compression.
Mm-hmm.
Also, folks with this condition where they have stretchy skin, they bruise really easily. I forgot the name of it, but they were saying, yeah, I don't like having tight bra bands. There's also this other condition where folks get boiled on their sweat gland around their armpit. So it, again, is caused by chafing of the bra can cause those that condition. So yeah, all these things that I learned along the way that could be better with having no tight band.
Yeah, so cool. It's like the more you kind of dove into this, the more you learned about the people and the things that they're dealing with in their daily lives and how your product could help them. I'm curious, what were kind of the first steps that you took then to start this business? Did you originally go into it wanting to start a brand and sell these teas to other people? Or was it initially just, I want to create a tea for me?
So, originally, it was exploring the idea was a tea for me. But then the more I talked to people about this, they were like, oh my gosh, you need to patent this and make this into a business. So I'm like, yeah, that sounds like I could do that. So, but if I knew now what I knew then about starting a business, I don't know if I would have done it. Being naive was a lot of why I started on this journey, I think. I don't know if you think that as well.
Mm-hmm. I think it's good that most of us don't realize what goes into a business, because we probably would be like, at least those of us who are like perfectionists would be like too scared off. I can't do that. But then you jump in and you do it and you figure it out and it's all good. And that's how everybody starts.
Exactly. Yeah. 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 People pleaser and perfectionist. Starting this business, definitely the biggest self-work, inner work journey I've ever done in my life, because all your demons come at you. And you think you addressed them, but I had this life coach, Shay. Shout out her healthy hustle. She told me the bigger the level, wait, the higher the level, the bigger the devils. And I'm like, that is so true. Your devils never leave you.
Would you be comfortable sharing like an example of what types of things came up for you and how did you face those devils in as you started this business?
Yeah, for sure. So a lot of self-doubt because I had no experience in product fashion design, no experience starting a business. My first generation college student, child of immigrants. And I think when you grow up as my parents, they instilled values in me like hard work, patience, but they also taught me things like just keep your head down and work, don't stir the pot too much. They raised me as, a lot of women, I think, were, when you're raised in a Christian household that's conservative and strict, you're just taught as a woman to keep the peace, act pretty and nice and docile and don't, I think, yeah, and just don't make a scene. But I think when you're an entrepreneur, you have to unlearn all of that. And it was very difficult. And especially as a child of immigrants, there's a lot of scarcity thinking and fear mongering that I had to unlearn and still unlearn. So that was a lot of that work in the first 4 years, I think, and still doing. Yeah. Especially with relaunching this, building a team, relaunching this product, and potentially fundraising.
Yeah, I grew up in a similar, I would say not super strict, but similar conservative Christian environment. And there are things into adulthood and with entrepreneurship and just career in general life that, yeah, you have to kind of look at and say, okay, how has this impacted me? And is that a good thing or a bad thing? And kind of assess critically how have the messages I've been told, either from upbringing or just from the world in general, even like with your business, it's like women should wear bras. And you're like, well, should they? And relooking at these things and maybe finding a better way for some of those things.
Exactly. It's all about you and what you're comfortable with because we're just inundated with what we should be all the time.
So you mentioned kind of building a team and growing the business. What was kind of the next steps you took once it sounds like you had some people around you who were like, go for it, make it a business. So what did you do then?
Oh, yes. Okay. Well, it was first an internal decision that, yes, I'm going to just go for it. Yeah. What happened in, well, yeah, first I started making samples and I started because there's factories that have development packages that can turn your ideas to life, but really make sure to vet these things because I think some of them just take your money and give you something random. So, yeah, just be clear on your vision and ask for help. I wish I asked for more design help when during this time because I was lost. And so that was the first step for me to get samples made. And then after that, I mean, that was like kind of the, I wouldn't say the easy part, but I think the hard part is birthing your baby to the world. So all of the marketing and telling people about it and a product company takes capital up front and lots of resources to do the photo shoot, create your photo samples, throwing money at the development people, throwing money at marketing, throwing money at business coaching because I didn't have any business experience. And you're just throwing money at a lot of things. And so make, yeah. And then also during this time, my dad got cancer and he was given a year left to live. And thankfully, we got a second opinion and he's alive and well now. But that really forced me to reprioritize what I wanted to do in life. So, and I was like, yes, I do want to start this and just see where it goes. So that's like an internal decision you have to make for yourself. I think that's really important not to half-ass it because I think we do a lot of self-sabotage in starting a business. And but those were the first steps to get it started.
Yeah, there are so many things, aren't there? And especially when you're starting kind of, you're the sole founder. a few things that I want to kind of dig in more. So we talked about there's a lot of money spent up front before you have a product to sell. How did you fund that? Were you kind of self-funded or crowdfunded? What did you do to kind of raise the capital for that initial investment?
Oh, yes. So I was working as a consultant at a healthcare company before, and then I was also a project manager. So I basically used my employers, were my first investors, as a term I've heard before, which I think that makes the creating process so much more fun when you just don't have that pressure of money to create something. You have freedom to create. And yeah.
Yeah. Are you still then working in consulting, or have you since kind of went full-time with Victory?
Yeah. So my initial manufacturing order, I did a Kickstarter. So that was very helpful for as a new brand. You have pre-orders and you have the manufacturing money up front. And I've since gotten laid off from my project manager job. So I was like, oh, I guess that is my sign to go full-time. So I have since been, I was just working on Victory for a year, but I burned through my Roth IRA and my investment accounts and my unemployment. Oh, again, running a business just takes resources. Mm-hmm. And so I've had to go get some part-time work to keep funding the business, not go crazy, because, you know, create again from a place of abundance, not because I was really low on money and I could feel it in my work. Like I was in scarcity mode creating, which is not fun.
Mm-hmm. And that's such a great point. And I think a lot of founders, they think, oh, the dream is to be full-time with my business and I haven't made it until then. But there are so many people where it's, you're so much happier if you take that pressure off yourself, and maybe you'll get there, but maybe you don't. There are a lot of founders who don't want their business to be their full-time because it becomes less fun or more pressure. And so that's really great that you kind of realized where your limit was personally and were like, well, I'm going to do what's best for me and for kind of the long term of the brand to take that pressure off.
Yes. And it took me some time to realize, because I had to sit down with another person, Savannah Suttle. She's an organizational psychologist, a consultant. And she was like, girl, when I don't want to look at something, I just don't want to look at it. And that thing was my finances at that moment. And she forced me to, very kindly sat me down. And she was like, girl, you need to get a job because you're not going to survive. I'm like, you're right. I can't be DeLulu about this anymore. Like some parts of us, we can, as a founder, I think we need to be DeLulu about certain things, but finances, no.
Mm-hmm. Either you need to be looking at it or have somebody else you trust who's like looking at it and giving you the highlights.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So how has your perspective and kind of approach to your business and your role in it shifted over the years?
Yeah, great question. So I'm going to approach this from my role as a CEO. So I thought I had to learn, in the beginning, I was like, I need to learn all the marketing, social media, be a design person, business person, finance person. And that was a lot of pressure. Social media is maddening enough already.
For sure.
So I think as a CEO, my role, and thank goodness I had experience as a project manager. I think in life, the world gifts you experience to set yourself up for success later. So using my experience as a project manager, I was able to learn how to delegate and set timelines. And I saw the value in not doing everything yourself and delegating it to people. So I think part of being a CEO, you're just like a super project manager who sets the vision and keeps everybody on track.
Yeah, I totally agree. So since then, it sounds like you have kind of cultivated a little bit of a team, or at least advisors, to help you with different aspects. Who is on your team at this point?
Yeah, so I have a wonderful director of content, Natalie Novak. She started as our first intern, and then we loved her so much. And she's been great. She keeps me on track because when you're just working by yourself, I'm so bad at keeping myself accountable to deadline. So I think hiring people to keep yourself on track is a lot less expensive than coaches. So, we got our doctor on our advisory board. So Dr. Janine Ellenberger, she is co-founder of a mental health startup and founder and CEO of a skincare brand. So she has sensory sensitivities, and her kids have autism. So she has lived experience of the sensory sensitivities. And Anicia Ali, which is a wonderful designer out of New York that's worked with BCBG professor at School of Parsons. And again, these are all the advisory board people. I just literally put a job posting on LinkedIn and they applied. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is awesome.
Cool.
I know. So LinkedIn job postings, shout out. LinkedIn. And then also Sarah Vasquez, she also has ADHD. I mentioned her before. So, and she keeps us on brand with our messaging and has created a wonderful personalized ChatGPT for us with her ad agency, Ad Alchemist. And then Maddie, our intern, who has a brother with autism. So again, like, you kind of build your tribe with people who align with your mission.
Yeah, it sounds like it. And so cool. It seems like everyone on the team is like very passionate about your mission and the purpose for the brand and are excited to offer their skills in these different areas to help.
Yes, exactly.
Awesome. So what is next for Victory? What are your kind of plans for the future? What is the vision that you have?
Forgot one more. Bellamy, who is a retail analytics person, she gets really nitty gritty into, she's on our advisory board too, forgot to mention her. I'm not a nitty gritty person, but she is. So that's filling in your gap with people on your advisory board is great. And so, yeah, and what is next for Victory? We are relaunching our No Nip, our original No Nip tee, and that has the band free, nip free comfort design. And we are also launching a lounge collection, which has compression that gently hugs and contours your breasties. So, and again, we are designing that with the advisement of Dr. Janine Ellenberger and with Anicia, which she has extensive experience and teaches at this Parsons School of Design. So very excited for our next relaunch.
Yeah. Do you have a date for that yet?
Aiming for September.
Cool.
Pre-order, yes.
Well, we'll have to put the link in the show notes so people can check it out when it goes live, because I think this podcast will come out before then, but people can look forward to that because I know it'll be really cool.
Yes, yes. Yeah, we are designing. We're taking I've interviewed over 75 customers, so taking all that feedback and inputting it, incorporating it into our new design, and it's going to be amazing. Help you, because there's this mental health wellness aspect of clothing too that I think is untapped, and we're at the intersection of that.
Yeah. So that's wonderful that you got so many, it sounds like, kind of formal responses and feedback from customers. What kind of systems, or how do you go about collecting that feedback, getting people to be like engaged? I feel like sometimes it's hard to get people to respond unless it's a very somebody new personally kind of thing. So how do you build that kind of relationship with your customers that they're like giving you all this amazing feedback?
Yeah, well, first off, I think the Kickstarter community is very vocal and loves the in the process. So I think that already is great. And then making sure you build something that solves an actual problem with an actual pain point, I think is next. Because if you're just building a pretty, I mean, yes, we love pretty garments, but it's hard to get feedback, you know, because that's subjective. Do you think the red or blue look better? So, yeah, solving a real problem and just asking third, because you never know if you don't ask, and just approaching it with humility and knowing that you wouldn't be here without your customers, and centering your customers at the Ford Center, which I need to be better about. I think Kristen Anderson does a really great job with her brand,
Yeah,
which I took
iteration.
info from. Yes. Yeah. And yeah, including the customers in our design process. We have a customer advisory board, and who, you know, are committed to helping us give feedback and do focus groups. So that's been really great, including them in the design process.
Are there any insights that you could share, kind of like that have come out of that, like customer advisory board or this feedback that maybe you hadn't expected? You were thinking one thing and they came back and were like, nope, this other thing.
Yeah, I think one of them is our messaging, 'cause like our previous messaging was we're all about being shamelessly comfortable, which I think our boobs that carry a lot of shame, but it when talking to our customers, it we realized that it wasn't a empowering message, that you buy your shirt to avoid shame. Let's
It
do
was a
that.
negative instead of a positive.
Exactly. So that was a good learning. And then from a design perspective, we were toying with the idea of putting more supportive elements on the bottom, because we did get some complaints that, not complaints, but concerns that there's no support. But I think our customers, they liked the lack of support, or the band-free design, and our design. The lining is also, it's only in the front, it's not in the back, so it's very breathable. So just validating the vision was really important for me, because people just, they give you so much of their feedback and you get kind of confused, honestly. And it makes you stray from your vision. So having those trusted people has really helped me be aligned with the vision.
Yeah, that's such a great point. So you mentioned the messaging and what it was to start with. What would you say the primary message of Victory is now?
Yeah, the primary messaging is comfortable on your terms, being self-sovereign in your desires, wants, and needs, and still to be. I think being shamelessly comfortable, it's still a great, we all want to be like our comfortable selves shamelessly, but definitely, yeah, the comfort on your terms.
Yeah, that feels much more, that feels powerful. And it still speaks to that if the shame is like that pressure and shame is part of somebody's story. I feel like it still speaks to it, but then it kind of encompasses so much more. So, and then, yeah, that's so cool that you have that group of people to advise on the design. And you were talking about how it's easy to, or it's hard to not get 1 inch in every direction with,
Yeah.
varying feedback. So, like, how do you stay true, incorporate this feedback while staying true to the vision and not getting kind of like spread too thin or distracted by these other things?
Exactly. Especially as a people pleaser. Yeah, it's been hard. Well, knowing that, first knowing the cost of everything and knowing what's financially feasible for you to do is very important. So that means just having really good communication with your factory and asking them to cost out everything during the development process. And then when seeing what are the high priority items, high priority changes that customers want, and if we can do that. And that can be a long list, because every little fabric trim tag make a big Excel sheet and cost it out and prioritize it. And then,
That's a great tip.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're like, oh, this is a cool feature. We should add that and that. And then people are like, that's not actually what I want, what I'm willing to pay for. And so sometimes removing features, like you mentioned, remove the underband, remove tags so it's not like itchy.
Yeah.
Remove extra seams where those are saving you costs, but they're also making it more valuable to the customer.
Exactly. So, and yeah, being really clear on your design values as well. So we're, again, all about near inclusive design. So that's really our North Star and sustainability as well. But the customer feedback part, yeah, so after we gathered a lot of the feedback in a survey Google form, I did a focus group and we talked about all the changes that were proposed. And that was very helpful, getting like real time feedback and having a discussion around the proposed changes. I basically did like A and B. Would you like this option or this option more with the changes that were proposed? So that was very helpful.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes sense of kind of whittle it down, keep it focused, but add the experience of others to back it up.
Yeah. And better for me from a design perspective, because it releases all the pressure for me to make all these decisions. So it went on both ends.
For sure. Have you ever faced, in the years of running Victory, have you ever faced a difficult decision in regards to sticking to your values or your vision? And if so, can you share what it was and how you handled it?
Yeah. I think branding is very difficult as the brand. I haven't had a really like hard, harrowing time because I think we're so new, but Elaine and sticking with it, because again, you're inundated with so much feedback and information from well-meaning people. But yeah, sticking with the neuro-inclusive, with your brand values and how you want to position your brand and making sure you're testing that and getting the data to back up your positioning.
And the challenge of taking that information but not letting it inform you but not sway you from the things that are the most important, it sounds like.
Exactly. Yeah, you're very good at condensing my stream of consciousness. So thank you. I think, yeah, especially as a new brand, you're just like always seeking information. So one of the difficult parts to just stay in your lane and your vision.
Mm-hmm. I think it can be scary for so many people. I do some coaching for other like freelance designers and then also just talking to other business owners on this podcast. So many people struggle with, oh, if I focus down, if I kind of pick a lane and stay in it, that's going to be too narrow. There won't be enough people. There won't be enough customers. There won't be enough work, or won't be able to make it work. And it's so scary to everybody. Mm-hmm. But then it really is super beneficial, because you can become really known for you're the brand that has the no nib, bandless, strapless tee. Like,
exactly.
You're the one, you are the brand for that. And so you can become known and the go-to for that thing. But then, yeah, it's so tempting, especially early on, to be like, oh, but we could do all these other things too.
Mm-hmm.
And it's scary to kind of make a choice and stick with it, or know when to tweak it slightly, but like how to stick with those important things and not lose that.
Yes. And in the beginning, I think it's a lot with your intuition, because you don't have that much data in the beginning either.
Mm-hmm.
So know where to go. So it's a lot of just trusting yourself and not knowing that even if you do make a wrong decision, you can fix it.
100%. So on a lighter note, what has been the funniest entrepreneurial moment you've experienced?
What a good question. As an entrepreneur, you have to make ridiculous TikTok videos. What?
You have some good ones, though.
Oh, thank you so much.
Please watch some on Instagram. So maybe there's more on TikTok I haven't seen. But
oh, yeah, TikTok and Instagram reels. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, these are so relatable and hilarious, but also too real.
Yeah. So I think people want to see that founder story and have that real authentic connection. So you have to take your ego, put it on the ground, stomp all over it, so you can show up authentically online. And so my brand's all about boobs and nips, so I've just had to do, I've taken off my bra in public, or I like lift up the victory tee to show the lining in public mm-hmm. places. I'm not showing my boobs, but I just like to be a little provocative. So that, and which is on brand, because we're all about being boldly yourself and comfortable in your terms. But yeah, that those are definitely the funnier, slightly cringy moments of my brand.
How has kind of the reaction been to those? Do people like really relate to the more kind of like raw, real, this is me, who this is who I am and who the brand is stories?
Yes, for sure. And yeah, they don't yet. Yeah, the videos that get the most views. Oh my gosh, I got this. The video that's gotten most views on my Instagram is of my mom, and we were just at dinner, and she wasn't wearing a bra when I was over, and it was fine, her you can see her nipples. But then my brother came over, and then she tied this sweatshirt awkwardly around her chest.
Oh, that one's.
Yeah, yes. And that one has 800,000 views. So it's like this real moment that people crave and want. And I didn't even plan for it. It just happened. I just pulled out my camera.
It's too funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's those. It probably everyone else is, oh, I've been there. I've done something like that before. This is real.
Exactly.
So I have one more question that I ask everyone at the end of the interview, which is, if you could communicate one value to the world through the clothes you design, what would it be?
If I could communicate one value, it would be to be comfortable on your terms, and you deserve to be self-sovereign in your comfort and how you show up, especially your boobs.
Nice. Yep. Mm-hmm. Very in line with everything we talked about. So. Wonderful. This has been such a fun conversation, Kiona. Where can people find out more about you and Victory online?
Yeah, so our Instagram is Victory, VKTORI.co, and we're on TikTok, Victory.co as well. And find me on LinkedIn, Kiona Moy, and please sign up for our email list and wait list on our website, www.victoryvktori.com. And I'm so excited to connect with anybody and everybody along the design journey.
Well, I will put links to all those in the show notes so people can follow what you're doing and see the upcoming collection when it launches. Thank you so much for joining me today, Kiona. This has been great.
Yes, thank you, Allison, for having me.
That's all for today. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend. And if you would like more episodes and resources like this about growing a fashion business that fits your customer lifestyle and values, sent right to your inbox, you can sign up for the How Fitting newsletter at howfittingpatterns.com/newsletter or at the link in the show notes. Again, thank you for listening, and I hope you'll join me again for the next episode of How Fitting.